All right, so I would like to call this Board of Education meeting for February 19th, 2018 to order. May I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Davis.
Here.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Here.
Mrs. Hickey.
Here.
Mr. Martyri.
Yep.
Mr. Moore.
Here.
Dr. Thompson and Ms. Williams are not here.
Okay, so the first thing we always do is recognize visitors and invite comments from the public. Do we have any comments signed up from the public?
Well, we do have one from the public, and if I can preempt it, I'd love to do that.
That's the only one.
If I may please introduce Ms. Denise Matthews. And the board will note that Denise is being recommended this evening for the position of the Director of Special Education role in District 90, starting on July 1st. And she had wanted to come tonight to bring greetings, so.
Hi, good night.
Welcome.
So I'm Denise Matthews. I know a couple of faces already. And I just wanted to come here tonight to just thank you. And I'm so excited to be here. I know that you may know a little bit about my background, but it's kind of like coming home. I've been around this community for many, many years before kind of venturing out. So I'm very excited to be in a smaller school district with a more intimate setting and kind of knowing my students. So I'm excited to be here, and I thank you, and I hope, looking forward to working together.
Well, we're grateful to have you come tonight.
Welcome on board. We're very thrilled to have you here.
Thank you.
Julie. Too bad you couldn't get anyone to write a glowing recommendation. That was the problem I had going through the podcast. Goodness, I've never seen such glowing recommendations.
Oh, thank you.
So. Absolutely. Well, and I know that you made a special trip to come back from out of town early.
Yep.
So Denise indicated she's probably going to stay a few minutes, but then she has some things to do tonight to be ready for work tomorrow morning. But it means a lot that you were willing to come.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Thanks for coming. All right, so the next item of business is an approval of the agenda.
Okay, it's okay.
So can you get a motion?
Motion to approve.
Excellent. Second, someone?
Second.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yep.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Okay, communications.
None.
Do we have any? None?
I believe we have any.
Us in the community, nothing. All right, Freedom of Information Act. Ed, we've had a few.
We have. So we actually had three over the course of the last month. One was from a community member regarding request for information about cross number and placement of crossing guards funded by District 90. We had a second FOIA request from the Illinois Retired Teachers Association for contact information for soon-to-be-retired employees. And we had a third from the Prairie State Wire, which is an online publication, asking really in aggregate for a lot of personnel-related information about employees. To the degree we were able to be responsive on all three, we did so and responded within the time that was allowed.
Excellent. All right, I know we have a schedule for some student presenters. I don't think they've gotten here yet, so we will hold that item until possibly later in the agenda, something to look forward to. And that moves us to the consent agenda, which includes minutes from the Board of Education meeting of January 16, 2018, the special board meeting of January 30, 2018, and the committee of the whole meeting January 31st, 2018, payrolls, orders relating to payrolls, bills, and a treasurer's report.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey.
Yes.
Mr. Martyri.
Yep.
Mr. Moore.
Yes.
All right, that jumps us into board committee reports. We will start off with education and Nicole. Thank you for that brief report, Nicole. We will move on to personnel and Rich. Rich, anything big in personnel?
We have later on in the meeting, we will approve, or I ask that you approve our personnel recommendations, including our illustrious visitor this evening.
Excellent. I think Stacy didn't come because of the size of the policy report that's in here. I guess Ed will handle that later on. We'll just go through the items and take questions and stuff if people have them. All right, Finance Committee, Cal.
In the packet, we have payables, we have a treasurer's report, and new software by our township treasurer that will be going into effect.
Apparently, it is software that school districts love, according to the materials we received. So there you go. Equity Committee, you know, we did have a meeting and it was actually a very long one and a very thoughtful one. And we didn't just talk about a number of the items that were on our agenda, which included everything from, you know, development of metrics, et cetera, et cetera. But I think a really big part of that meeting that I would like to highlight was a focus on how we communicate the equity efforts to the community at large to make sure that we're being accurate. I think what's being lost in the discussion is that a focus on equity is equally a focus on excellence. And I don't know that that message has gotten out well enough or that we've been coherent enough in making that message. And really, the research, the evidence, they all indicate that diversity, let's say among faculty, is a positive thing for all your students, white included. White kids learn better from a more diverse faculty. We haven't done a good job of communicating. And so in a community like ours, you know, where the expectation is that kids will succeed and that the school district will perform well, the student achievement will be high, I think we have to make it very clear to everyone in our community that really our equity focus, while it is intended to eliminate achievement gaps and we believe that we shouldn't have any in River Forest, it's also a movement towards excellence and excellent education. And we spend a lot of time talking about it. And I think that's the right thing. So we're gonna think about that in framing and in communications, is just being more accurate in how we talk about that effort with the community. Ed, anything else you wanted to highlight? That's what I wanted to highlight from the meeting. And we covered a lot of stuff. But I thought that was a really important discussion. And I'm thrilled that Catherine from D97 has been making our last couple of, a board member from D97 has been making our last couple of equity committee meetings. And Sarah Spivey from D200 is also on our equity committee. And they are the my co-members of our tri-equity committee. So we're really trying to integrate our efforts, and I think we're doing a nice job of getting some buy-in among the three boards on moving together. So anyway, that was it. That moves us to Ms. Deogracias and the facilities report.
Well, later this week, Anthony and I will be at the Village for the Preservation Commission meeting on the 22nd. And then in the packet, there's also some long-range plan information about the things that will need to take place at the facilities.
And if it's all right, actually, I think it'll be the two of us, along with the architect, on Thursday night.
Okay.
So,
it's a conflict. I'm sorry.
So, it'll be nice to have that meeting, though.
Okay, yeah.
Absolutely.
Who's getting the coffee?
It's my turn.
Communications report.
I don't believe there's anything really new on communications going on right now.
Excellent. Gender Inclusion Ad Hoc Committee, Barb and Rich.
We have progress to report, although we're not quite ready to identify everyone who has agreed to work with us, but Rich and Ed and I conference called and identified a group of people who we would like to have involved with these efforts. And many of them are, I believe, are in place. There might still be one or two in flux. Just one?
Just one.
Just one is still thinking about it. So I believe we'll be able to identify who all of them are at the next time this comes up. Ed, would you add anything to that?
Very well said.
Rich, anything to add?
I think getting the composition of the committee is step one.
Right, and we considered that very carefully, whom to involve and what their various backgrounds and expertise would contribute to the effort. So it was a thoughtful conversation followed by doing a lot of sweet talking over the phone on Ed's part to get these folks involved in the effort. So we should have some names to report next week.
All right, and that jumps us up to Ed stealing some of the spotlight with a district calendar review.
So today we had a fantastic Teachers Institute Day that was comprised of some really wonderful technology training that was teacher-driven and teacher-facilitated, which was really cool to see, and a reinforcement of how talented our teachers are. And then this afternoon, two sessions on inclusion, which was really exciting and well done, one by an outside consultant and one by Karen Buzel, our director. Obviously, this evening, the Board of Ed meeting, and then later this week, there are four different showings of the musical Once Upon a Mattress, If you haven't gotten your tickets, you might want to move quickly, because I know that tends to sell out. But it's both Thursday night, Friday night, and then Saturday and Sunday are the matinees. Hard to believe, but it's time also on the 1st and 2nd for parent-teacher conferences. We do have a Casimir Pulaski holiday on the 5th. The next CAL meeting, or the next meeting of the board, will actually be the CAL meeting on March 6th. So hard to believe we'll be in early March at that point in daylight savings.
Ed, is it Thursday and Friday that the kids are doing the performances of the musical during the day?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I'm sorry. Would you like for me to
I always crash
out?
Those.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let me send that out to
and
the
it's
board
fun
so
because
you're
if
aware.
You come, if you're able to come during the day, you can see both casts.
It typically is, but I want to make sure you know the times.
Okay.
Yeah.
It would, and the rest of the board might like to know.
Absolutely. We'll send it out.
So due to the snow day, did it move the calendar back at all? Or
it did.
Absorbed?
It did. So we sent something out through the school messenger just to notify families and staff that, yeah, as per the calendar, we'd be using our first emergency day, which now has us dismissing on a Friday, which Anthony is not too keen about, but a lot better than if we have to roll over to the following week. Because, of course, we're trying to start construction. So after the poor weather rolled through, he said, well, that's the only poor weather that's allowed. I figured if there's anyone
there
in the world
no
that could control
end
that,
of discussion.
It's probably. So.
So you ordered the rain today and tomorrow.
Wash it all away.
If there's water in my basement, I know who to call.
All right, so it's good to know we're still observing the day in honor of the patron saint of school children in Cook County, Casimir Pulaski. But that's going on. All right. Council of Governments, we haven't met since our last report. My next meeting with that is on May 11th, so that jumps us up to the OPRF Citizens Council. Rich?
Snow Day,
sweet. Youth Network, Barb?
Youth Network Council did meet. I don't know that there's that much that's new to report. Other than that, I'm always interested, and I can send along to the board, in what the interventionists are doing in River Forest, the township interventionists. They have a bigger load than one would think. We have one of them coming over and meeting with the group out of the library on a regular basis. But I will, I have a graphic from them, which I will pass along to Ed and make sure that everybody gets a chance to see it, because I know that they're funding request comes up every now and then, and we really do want to know what they are doing in River Forest, and they are a little more active than one might think. So I want to make sure that we pass that information along.
Okay, you still have the floor, Barb, with PTO Council.
PTO Council, they are always busy. The PTOs are always doing amazing things for us. Ed, can you think of anything that we really need to include that's...
There was actually a good course on top, as you mentioned, of all of the noting of the events that are going on and the PTOs are supporting. We did have a brief conversation about the PTO co-president's perceptions on how the tragedy in Parkland, Florida, was impacting students and families and discussion with the community. It was helpful, certainly, to garner their feedback. We had discussion about summer school, several other policy-related things. I'm sorry.
I don't recall anything really that needs to be shared with the board, but the contacts with them are always valuable.
Absolutely.
You get a finger on the pulse of what's going on in each of the buildings.
Absolutely.
And that's always amazing stuff.
Okay, in lieu of Stacy, Ed, do you have anything on inclusive?
No, not since the last meeting.
Okay, great. Service Club, Nicole, thank you for that report. Quick, pithy. Citizen Corps Council, Judy.
The last time they met was the end of January, and they're not expecting to meet again until preparations for the Memorial Day Parade. So late April, early May, and they just were talking about the transition between the new chief of police, and it was actually I think it was the morning after the safety committee, or the safety meeting, the community safety meeting that they had in River Forest about all of the recent events that have gone on. and they just talked a little bit about that and staffing up. They are looking for volunteers for the Citizens Corps.
Barb, you interested in volunteering? I'm just saying.
I need one more thing.
Yeah, you do. All right, so the West Cook Governing Board, the next meeting is coming up in March. And
it's the day of our cow, unfortunately.
The day of our cow, so we won't be attending in full order there.
I think Rich is actually going to be representing us. So
there is an issue, the issue of transgender.
Yeah, that's coming up. It's actually, it's a really good agenda for us, but sadly it does conflict.
So you're going to attend that one, good.
Way to take one for the team, Rich.
I'm guessing it's baked chicken.
All service.
Could be baked chicken.
Could be baked chicken.
Yeah. Well, actually, there's usually a contest after the dinner. You got to guess whether it was something that flew, swam, or walked. So, see where you come out on that.
Puck.
Yeah. Ed Red, I did not make the last Ed Red meeting. Their big whoop-de-doo in January. So, unfortunately, I wasn't able to go. Were you able to go?
I was able to go, yeah. The many of the scheduled participants were down in Springfield, however.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a general conversation by the by the panel about the state of education and preparing students for the industries that are available in Illinois. So how much education is needed to fill those very high-paying jobs is one of the interesting topics.
Excellent. And then, Barbara, the last one is the River Forest Subcommittee on
which will meet on Wednesday evening.
Okay.
And I believe the subject is that we're going to talk about how to create and curate a community calendar that would include input from each of the various governing bodies that will be of interest to River Forest citizens, where that information will come from, how we will put it all together. So that's what's on the agenda.
Excellent. All right, so Ed, that brings us up to the district meeting agendas.
Yes, so we had three that were included in your board packet this evening. The first is Superintendent's Leadership Council, and as the board recalls, really the lion's share of their work this year is looking at the issue of standards-based grading and how our transition to standards-based grading can be effectively communicated. The central question, which you'll see on the agenda, that really the SLC members are wrestling with is, what do we still need to learn about regarding the equity basis for adopting standards-based grading? And we feel like building some consensus around the answer to that question will be really important to support the transitions to all the changes that will be necessary to make standards-based grading successful. As the board probably recalls, we're coming near to the end of the second year of a 4-year implementation plan. So it's hard to believe, but next year we'll actually be thinking about how we can create a pilot on a standards-based grading model, very likely starting with the elementary level and then following middle school down the road.
Has NEP done any work on that?
NEP was at the January SLC meeting and facilitated the discussion with SLC. It was very well done. And that's what prompted, really, this question. NEP was at the December meeting.
Yes,
and prompted the discussion in January of what was here. So one of the things that we're preparing for is the SLC presenting to the faculty and staff at our April Institute Day on SBG. And
there aren't enough acronyms
there are not
in
enough
education,
acronyms. So we really want to make sure that those kind of key teacher leaders have a strong grasp on not only what standards-based grading represents, but how it dovetails with the other important initiatives that the district is trying to move together forward. And that's actually some of the focus of our work at the administrative training tomorrow with the NEP and the administrative team training session tomorrow afternoon. So anyway, it all moves together. Universal Design for Learning, similarly, are looking at the intersection between universal design and mindset. And as the board is very well aware, our faculty and staff have really latched on to the value that growth mindset can play in their interactions with kids and engagement in the classroom. So seeing the linkage between that kind of conceptual idea and how we might successfully implement universal design across the district is a really important kind of connection to make. So hats off to Tina Stecchetti, Allison Hawley, and Diane Wolf for the leadership. And then we already discussed the PTO council. So that moves us on.
The action items are the next things for us to have a little conversation about, starting with policy.
Policy, yes. And so, you know, the board will undoubtedly recall last month's meeting where we spent an awful lot of time going through these policies. While Stacy's not here tonight, you know, I feel like I can answer any questions that she may have. There was one notable exception to the list of policies you have tonight, and that is policy 415. Last month, you were presented with a policy for your consideration regarding the Personal Information Protection Act, and you'll recall that we were a little bit conflicted because this is the policy where the IASB had suggested that boards should consider adopting it if they felt as though the PIPA was applicable to them or not.
Yes.
And had conflicting guidance from different attorneys on whether or not that was the case. Very long story short, one of the board attorneys that you use, a woman named Terry Engler, sits on the board for IASB and does some of the policy review for them. And she recommended at this time that we pull policy 415, but more clarity is going to be forthcoming in that, obviously, because many school districts have the same question we did. And that we would not be impeded by not having this policy in place because it was mainly clarifying language in the first place, and to wait until you know the better information comes forth. So that's not included in your list of policies recommended for approval this evening.
Okay, so which means, and this isn't a question on any specific policy, but
okay.
One thing that I thought of as a board member, and I thought I'd share it with the board and see if they agree, and if they do, then we'll ask for down the road for you guys to do this, because I think it might be a little bit of work.
Okay.
But if you note, there's a number of policies that say things like, whether it's legal requirements established by a statute somewhere, or just policy-based requirements, say things like the district shall have an AED on site that's a trained AED user, right, blah, 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 blah. I'm sure they do all this. But we as a board, do we monitor it? So I thought what might be helpful for us as a board is a list of the policies that have a sort of a requirement, just a table. And, you know, so this would be 417 whatever, AED on board. And just whether or not it's been complied with, a checklist, and have that reported on over the course of the year. Start the year with, here's what's been done, here's what's going to be done over the year. And we just monitor it every year. And I think that would make us all more comfortable that we're providing our oversight role, and it gives us a tickler system to understand sort of all the different legal requirements that the administration has to deal with, and our job to make sure is in place. So I would like to see that established where, maybe at the beginning of the school year, we get a list of these policies that have requirements that the district shall do X and such, whether it's training for concussion protocols, whatever it is, and by policy number, and then whether or not it's done, just to check off over the course of the year and check in on it. Maybe
or how even how it's done.
Or how it's done.
Very quick.
Yeah. Very quick. I mean, not a deep dive, but I think that would be good, and it's a good learning tool for the board to stay on top of all the different things you've got to wrestle.
Well, it's illustrative of your point. So tonight, obviously, one of the policies that you're probably going to approve deals specifically with that issue of concussion. And I thought to myself, gosh, in this discussion tonight, the board might very well have some questions about how we address concussions. So I met with Mark Gowecki, our AD, here at the middle level, and Larry Garski, and we talked about that. And I brought all the documents about our concussion oversight team, and so that I was able to answer those questions for you, because how can you be expected to approve policy requiring us to do something if you don't have confidence that that's being done? So I'd be very comfortable with that. I think it might, in the end, especially if we keep that as a living document.
That's the suggestion, like a tickler system, dates to be completed by checkoffs, and like, I don't know how many times a year, 3 times a year, quarterly to the board, or report on whatever makes sense.
Yeah, whatever is managed.
I mean, obviously, everything's done in the first half of the year.
Sure.
It's done for the year.
You have the team or you don't
right.
have the team.
Right.
Yeah. So, but we can, maybe we'll come together with a draft on that, and then if you'd like to see it, you know, take a different form or shape, we can always make adjustments.
Yeah. Well, Are we on board that that's a good thing to have?
Yes.
I'm sure that I shouldn't speak for her. I would guess that Stacy would be very supportive of that, too, as policy chair.
Great.
So were there any other questions of regarding any of the policies that are before us?
There's someone here.
Of course. This might just be a typo.
Come on in.
Why is there a line through department or department?
I think that's our report.
Let's go, we'll keep the department line.
My guess is we'll keep the full department.
What's the number? 590.
Hello.
Hello, Dania, right?
Dania, yeah.
I didn't mean to mispronounce. How are you? Good to see you.
I'm good.
Yeah, you know what? Your timing is perfect, as a matter of fact. Why don't you have a seat real quick? I think the board is just finishing up a discussion on a policy issue. And then if you're comfortable with it, would you be willing to share your presentation?
Of course.
Great, okay. All right, so we have the change in 590.
Yeah, all I caught was a typo. The redlining crossed out part of the word department for no reason. So put the word back in, the whole word back in. And I think I have one other little nit later on, but why don't we take a pause?
Take a pause.
In the exciting world of policy review for our student presenter.
And now you're here at Roosevelt.
Yes.
Are you in seventh grade this year?
Yes.
How's seventh grade going? You're about to tell us, right?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. Thanks for coming out tonight.
No problem.
What do you think of the homework load in seventh grade?
I think for what we're learning, I think sometimes it can get a little overbearing, but generally it's a decent amount. The teachers understand that we have a large amount of work.
Hi, welcome.
Got some great supporters here.
That is the most diplomatic comment I've ever heard from a seventh grader about the homework load in the seventh grade at Roosevelt. So excellent. Kudos to you for that.
Should I start?
Absolutely.
Success. Everyone has a different view of what success means. For most, it's a similar concept. An accomplishment or multiple accomplishments that help you fulfill your goal. Hello everyone, my name is Danya Mirza, and I'm a seventh grader here at Roosevelt. I'm here to give you an update on what each grade and how they've been achieving success in the past few months. The fifth graders have started off their successful middle school lives with a very controversial debate. Should schools serve chocolate milk? From flash drafts to final copies, students practice their language arts related research skills and by deciphering persuasive texts as well as synthesizing information. In science, these debaters use their intellect to wrestle with the implications of invasive species. In social studies, students got a first-hand look at ancient Egyptian artifacts at their trip to the Field Museum. The fifth graders will be finishing up their Egypt project with their Egypt unit with a project focusing on the ancient Egyptian society. In mathematics, fifth grade students continue solving equations involving fractions and will eventually move on to mixed numbers. Students in AGP Mathematics will soon begin their unit on fractions titled Let's Be Rational. As we inch up the grade ladder, we find the sixth graders. In core, which is comprised of reading and writing, they're reading Red Scarf Girl, a memoir of the Chinese Cultural Revolution. Students are practicing evidence-based writing as well as supporting their claims. In Common Core Mathematics, students will begin a unit called Let's Be Rational, and students in AGP Mathematics will begin a new unit called Comparing and Scaling. In science, the sixth graders' unit on weather recently came to a close with the investigation of temperature variations in different geographic regions. Students are scheduled to complete a defined STEM performance task that examines the effects of climate change. They will then start a mini unit on astronomy. As they marvel at the stars in astronomy, students will concurrently explore one of the 54 countries of the African continent and soon present their findings to their respective classes. They shall then embark on a new journey to Asia. Next on the list, you have the spectacular seventh grade. As you can see, I'm not biased at all. Starting off with reading, Ms. Micucci and Mr. Courtney's classes continue their study of Jack London's The Call of the Wild. Ms. Micucci's writing students will analyze sentences focusing on compound, complex, and compound, complex sentences. In Mr. Courtney's writing class, students are conducting experiments and creating laboratory reports. In the wonderful world of science, the seventh graders are using bouncing balls, swinging pendulums, and a bungee egg jump as an introduction to kinetic, gravitational, and elastic energies. Heartiest congratulations to the 10 seventh graders who filmed an entry for this year's Young Filmmakers Contest. Winners will be announced this month in advance for the One Earth Film Festival. In social studies, students have been learning about historical events that shaped our nation. Ms. Spanos' social studies class begins their journey towards understanding the United States Constitution. In Ms. Daniels' class, students are at the end of the American Revolution. We have navigated through many battles, acts, and dramatic scenes of the war. And finally, here is the update on the topmost tier of middle school, the eighth graders. In Ms. Epstein's reading class, students are analyzing the memoir Night by Elie Wiesel. In Ms. Zinger's class, students are finishing Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. In her writing class, students are completing their poetry analysis unit. Once completed, students will move on to personal narrative writing. In addition to books and poetry, the eighth graders have been continuing their science study, linking food and energy. In social studies, students are examining the rise of fascism and the outbreak of World War II. Students will be learning about significant events that are part of a wider war, such as the Holocaust, Japanese internment, and the use of atomic weapons. As part of Black History Month, students will be participating on a research project on how African Americans contributed to the war. And that brings me to the end of this education update. From the simple to the complex, scientific to literary, and philosophical to practical, Roosevelt students have been achieving success in many different ways. Thank you.
Danya, of course, you're invited to stay for the remainder of our board meeting and maybe have some input on the policy discussion we're about to have. Or if you choose, you can go home and enjoy your evening. But the choice is up to you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so
excellent
much.
Report.
Well done.
Good night. Do we happen to have another presenter tonight? Tonight. No, okay. We won't just put you up there without
maybe
preparation.
Maybe we should make better communication that the meetings have changed to 7 p.m.
Yeah, we forgot
that. Was really an excellent presentation. Public speaking.
And
so
got a lot
still,
of presence, doesn't she?
The other question I had in the policy review is, shouldn't there be a corresponding change in this 529 to what we did in 524? If there's employees under investigation by the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, we should have the same policy for educational support personnel as we do for professional personnel, don't you think?
It would make sense. This change was made.
It looks like this change was made.
Recommendation was made at the discussion last month.
And so the corresponding change wasn't made.
For 5290?
Yeah. Just the exact same change. I think that was all that I except that made me very happy. You'll all be thrilled to know the split infinitive has been removed from our policy paper. I know I was even.
Is that keeping you up at night?
It was. It even got me to draw a little smiley face on the page where, in fact, that was done. So that was it.
For different reasons, it was keeping
me up. I really was happy
too.
About that.
I'm just getting caught up here. Our last two student presenters seem to think that they were coming to meetings starting at 7:30.
I wonder if the school
how do we need to let them know that.
I'll make sure our school staff understand.
Because, we changed that, but I don't know that everybody knows.
Yeah.
We don't want them to.
I think this is something for our communications chair to test.
Okay, then. I could do that.
Would you like to delegate that to me?
Anthony and I can work it out.
There's a town crier somewhere, I think.
We'll put the town crier on
notice. So, very good. So does anyone else? Did anyone else have a few nits and gnats in the policy thing like that? Or am I the only nit and natter? Yeah.
You nitpicked the first reading.
Okay.
Yeah. I assume the motion is going to say as amended to make changes to 5290
and 590.
And 590.
5 90.
5:90 and 5:290.
Okay.
So can I get a motion to approve the policy statement as submitted with the aforesaid amendments?
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracius?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martieri?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
All right, informational items now. Long-range facilities plan.
Yes, and if you'd be so kind, I would hope that Mr. Cozy, our Director of Finance and Facilities, could lead that conversation.
You have in front of you in your packet on page 134 the first draft of the long-range facility plan. The format of this is just like last year, which it was a new format, which segregated the final all buildings by category group into two subgroups, repair, replace, preventative kind of measures as well, which represent routine projects required to sustain the buildings and grounds, taking into account the useful life of the fixed assets, and also new improvement, which represents an initiative without regard to useful life. So briefly going through just that section, because the by building sections is just a repeat of the by category sections. Two different colors here. If you're looking at it on the screen, it would be green and orange. If you're looking at it on paper, it's probably green and a very close yellow to green. So maybe part of our preventative maintenance is to buy new toners for the copy machine. We go through, I want to direct your attention to a couple of the larger items. If you in exterior construction, you see the classroom addition at Willard. That, as you know, this has been bidded out, awarded to the general contractor for the summer. The roofing project at Roosevelt School is in the bidding process. We have a notice that has gone out to the paper. There's a walkthrough coming up on March 7th with a bid opening. A walkthrough at the end of February with a bid opening in March. And this will be brought forth to you at the March board meeting with a recommendation for that, as I am doing work with various contractors on some of the smaller items, getting quotes. As you know, if they are not over the public bidding amount for construction projects of $50,000, we do not need to go to the public bidding process, so we just get competitive quotes. These are things that we've talked about with the building principals and the engineers, moving things forward, moving them back, prioritizing them with items that are more important to be handled in the upcoming years versus years further away, as well as trying to time things with summer school calendars to not put too much on the K-4 buildings in one summer. Obviously, as Roosevelt has summer school every year, or intention is to have that for them to have summer school every year, we will make do with trying to work around the summer school calendar. Is there anything on this list that has caught your attention that you want to discuss? As I said, other than those two projects, there is nothing higher than the threshold.
I'd link in the reading garden. I know it's not a drainage problem. I see it. You can see that it's an issue.
Yeah.
Was that in any way liable to the contractor for the grade or anything like that? If we're going to spend $35,000 correcting something?
No, because they didn't do anything that wasn't what we requested them to do. However, this was a much worse situation right around the time that they did this work, or even before it and after they did it. But the gutter and downspout work that we did in there last summer, if you remember, alleviated a lot of the problems. So we've been monitoring the drainage. I have pictures of it before the work was last summer. We've been following it. It is not nearly as bad, so that's why it hasn't been moved. It hasn't moved up that far in advance. On the schedule, but no, nothing that they did that wasn't a part of the scope of work.
I think it's a great space for kids, and yet when there's water, it's not a great space.
That's right.
The other thing was just a question. Nobody laugh, please. And when we look at replacing windows, do we consider whether window unit air conditioners could be, if we replace a window, could we consider windows that would allow window units in there? I know that's a whole big, we got to change the wattage, and there's a whole infrastructure thing there. But is that considered when we look at windows for replacement?
The window projects in here have not considered window unit air conditioners. It was something that we discussed very briefly when talking about the Willard project. Willard window project, I think back in 2014. The level of attractiveness of window units on the facade of a school made that board think about not doing it, not pursuing it. So we stayed with the type of windows and their openers. So if you're asking me in here, is there been discussions? No, but that is for you to direct the facilities committee.
Well, I mean, it's an ongoing, you know, item, I'm sure. So are there rooms that, you know, are just, you know, it could look awful on the outside, but you're comfortable on the inside. I mean,
I know what you're saying. You're trying to be forward thinking trying to, like, get the most bang for the buck, you know, for future improvements. I understand that.
Thank you for nobody laughing. It's a serious issue.
Actually, I'm crying on the inside.
Well, you look good on the outside, right? So let's.
Well, as you know, that is scheduled. And when I say scheduled, nothing more than a cell on this Excel spreadsheet for the summer of 19. You have, I'd say, about a year to discuss it. Or it could be pushed off to the summer of 20. It is Roosevelt. It could be pushed off into eternity if you want to continue to discuss it. But when it comes, none of these windows are in such bad shape.
Sure.
Isn't even the complete building. This isn't even the complete building because summer of 12 work that was done at Roosevelt to change the facade, changed a lot of the windows on the north side, went around towards the Lathrop side and the back there through lot. So really, I'd say it's about a little over half of the building. None of it is an emergency situation.
Does everyone find the new reporting format useful on sort of breaking down new versus maintenance items? I think that that's helpful. Do we have this available on our website in
yes.
kind of color breakdown?
Yes.
Great.
Now, this one isn't on there yet because
right.
they haven't seen it.
But I think it's a good way to, once again, be transparent.
Mm-hmm. Right. And in contrast to last year where I believe it was about 85% was preventative for the sustainability and a very small percentage. A little less than 15 was new improvement. This case, it's a little different because I have classified, I don't know if you agree, but I've classified the Willard addition to new improvement. So that's what made it about a 56-44 split this year.
I think it's a fair classification. I mean, it truly is new stuff. It's not maintaining existing stuff. It's just new stuff we need so that we could maintain existing academic program.
Yeah, maybe
so
there should be a third.
It's an interesting way to do it. But no, it's a new project, and that's the kind of new project. So I'm happy it's categorized as a new project because I'm happy to defend that to our constituents and taxpayers that it's a worthwhile new project because it really allows us to maintain the integrity of existing academic offerings and related offerings.
If any of the competitive quotes that we get go over the threshold and I have to stop the process and go to a public bidding process, I'll be sure to inform Mrs. DeGracias so that she can present it as in the facilities committee report in the future.
Excellent. Any questions about the facilities plan? It looks good.
I want to say Anthony does a great job keeping us organized, and we're lucky to have you.
Thank you so much.
That document requires a great deal of work. It's what's behind the document that really represents the time committed. So.
Well, and the thanks to all of the principals and building engineers for walking the halls and the bathrooms and the boiler rooms with me.
The fun stuff.
In that order.
It's called the nickel tour. Right? All right, so our next item tonight is pertaining to school crossing guards. There has been some recent conversation at the village trustees meetings regarding crossing guards and safety in the community. And tonight we wanted to do a couple of things, if we might, with this agenda item. The first was to provide for our board here just a little bit of history on at least recent history on school crossing guards and what has been in place over time so that there's clarity on that. We've noticed that there seems to be some confusion in the community, possibly, and some was voiced at a couple of those meetings, at least it seems, from some media reports about those agreements. And so we wanted you all to know what the agreements are and, you know, how they've evolved. And then secondly, I wanted to share a little bit of new information regarding the path moving forward. So, Anthony, if you would maybe just take a moment and walk us down memory lane, provide a kind of a quick overview of the history of the crossing guard, from recent history.
Yes. If you notice on page 155, the memo that I wrote, but I'll summarize this. This intergovernmental agreement was established in August of 2010, and then an amendment to that agreement in August of 2012. So I'm going to only go back to the beginning of that, 2010. Because prior to 2010, the village employed crossing guards for public safety. But their claim at the time was due to some financial position, they could no longer pay for that. So they entered into that intergovernmental agreement with the district, where the district would reimburse the village for related costs associated, but the village would be employing the guards and then hiring them and would be managing that situation. At that time, there were six guards posted, and I have listed the intersections. The village would provide the district with a written statement semi-annually, and the district would pay for that. The cost for those guards for fiscal years 2011 and 12 were $30,000 and change and $33,000 and change, respectively. In July of 2012, the village entered into an agreement with a third-party administrator, Andy Frayne Services, to administer that crossing guard program. So the district and the village agreed on an amendment of that intergovernmental agreement, and which the villages included the village's arrangement to outsource the administration of that program. And it also had an arrangement or an agreement that the village and the district would split the costs that were over and above an average amount of $35,650. So anything over and above that amount, the village and the district would split 50-50. Due to additional guards, due to inflationary increases, and due to the cost of the outsourcing, the annual cost for those 5 years after that are listed here as $43,000, $51,000, $55,000, $54,000, and $61,000 for the following 5 years, next 5 years, sorry. The number of guards increased from 6 to 7 in 2012, increased to 8 in 2014, 9 in 2015, and 10 in 2017. So the locations are currently of those 10 are listed here. Notably, numbers 9 and 10 were Roosevelt's North parking lot entrance and Roosevelt's Lathrop through lot entrance. That came about after all of the discussions about the renovation of the Roosevelt exterior. That is a very brief history of the recent history of the program and the division of responsibilities between the village and the district. Are there any questions?
I thought there was a guard at Washington and Franklin. In fact, I know there was until the village took away.
At Washington?
That guard, if there was one, it was prior to 2010. And if you remember it after, it would have been And it may have been, now you have probably seen that intersection longer than I have. Did they add that traffic light at that time, and that's why they took the guard away? But anything...
There is a traffic light.
Yes, but I thought the reason maybe for that, of taking the guard away, is because they've added the traffic light, or they had one with the traffic light.
I remember it being there, but you said it was 2005.
It was like 2005. It was a crossing guard here, though, with the traffic light.
Okay. We've had some inquiries. The police went out there and said that, in their professional opinion, because of the traffic light. I stood out there for an afternoon on a chilly day and on a warm day and waited to see how many students, I believe, I wrote it down, I don't have it with me, but there was only a handful after school both those times. I did it on, like I said, a fair weather day and a cold weather day. At Washington and Franklin.
That's because everybody drives their kids now because there's no crossing.
Could be. I don't have a reason for.
But that's not your your fault. I'm just saying.
And
that,
it's
that,
not.
That,
and then that if
and,
there's
and
no
it was
traffic
definitely before this study's purview.
Right.
So
and what it all really speaks to is the challenge is obviously inherent in trying to faithfully ascertain on the basis of safety what is really needed throughout the village. You know, those six crossing guards that were placed in 2010 were memorialized in the memo that we received from at that time Steve Gutierrez, the village administrator, indicating where they would be placed. It was a memo actually from the River Force Police Department. Obviously there have been requests from the District 90 end to add guards, which is how it's evolved now to a total number of 10. But the district has, while we have a great interest, obviously, in the safety of our students, we don't have expertise to bear on issues of public safety outside of the schools. And so we've been very reliant and had a great deal of support in so many ways, of course, from the River Forest Police and Fire Department as well to support our kids and our families. But they are the entity, the village, that is, as an umbrella organization that has the charge and mission and expertise to govern public safety. So it's a challenging dynamic. Well, obviously the students are very much, again, our interest and concern in their transit to and from school. So, of course, you know, the Board of Ed was grateful and I think responsive in partnering in the cost, the forthcoming cost for this soon to be conducted comprehensive safer routes to school study that the village will be conducting at the request of the village trustees, I believe, and the village administration. They have added a couple of elements to that comprehensive audit that will bring the district's cost up, school district's cost up, from about $8,500 to now $10,250. Some additional services that they'll be providing. I know that one of the components they'll be adding is a focus group where they're going to gather and collect some information from stakeholders, and a reporting requirement that's going to be included so that the Traffic and Safety Commission will have a chance to actually talk with the traffic analysts. The good news, of course, no one likes to hear about the increase in cost, obviously. The good news is that I think many are feeling as though this will genuinely be a comprehensive audit, soup to nuts, dealing with everything from students walking to and from school, to pedestrians in the community, to other related safety matters, to signage, to all of the things that make up this kind of public safety fabric of the Village of River Forest. At the same time, I wanted to share that there have been some citizens who have been advocating for placement of crossing guards with the village. They had communicated with us, and you know, we did share that based upon the language in the IGA, you know, we trust the village to make recommendations, even though largely, or at least partially, District 90 is on the hook for the cost, that we trust the village to guide, from a safety perspective, what is needed. And so some of the public citizens I know have been speaking with the village, and the village agreed particularly to look at a couple of locations on Oak Avenue more closely. And they contracted with a traffic analyst who came out and did an analysis specifically on the intersection of Oak and Franklin. Importantly, and interestingly, and I'm paraphrasing, which isn't really fair because obviously it's a substantial analysis, but essentially in their conclusion, the analyst did not indicate that they felt there was a pressing need for additional crossing, either equipment or a guard or anything like that. But importantly, the village also sent out a couple of River Forest police officers to do an anecdotal observation. And some of what the police officers observed was disconcerting enough that there was discussion again at the village board meeting about the inconsistency between the analysts' assessment and what apparently was kind of boots on the ground seen happening.
Question.
Yes.
What specifically do the analysts look for? Are they looking at it like from a quantitative type of analysis, or are they looking at it from, you know, like how many cars come through per 15
minutes? It's a much more clinical look.
How many people are walking and in what direction?
Yes.
And then are the police looking at it from, like, how many near misses?
Yes,
how many
infractions,
okay.
Or
okay.
Not just how many people are walking, but how many of those are children and how many of them maybe were on the phone at the time. Or, you know, drivers
which
that
would be
are distracted,
them, right?
You know, at that intersection as opposed to just the vehicle load. So, that having been said, I had a conversation with our village administrator who's been nothing but supportive in every way from the beginning on this and asked him about that inconsistency. I had not been provided with that report. But it was posted in the village trustees packet, so I was able to access it. And I asked him about that. And he and the River Forest Police agreed to give us a recommendation after some discussion on the analyst report and the police officer's anecdotal observations. And they have recommended that for safety reasons, crossing guards be placed at the corners of Oak and Park, Oak and Franklin, and Oak and Ashland for the time being.
Wow.
The thinking on that would be, it would be, at the moment, technically a temporary placement pending the release of the comprehensive audit. One of the things that I've learned throughout this process is that there are a lot of unintended consequences of changing one or another element of how traffic and vehicle load and students walking can influence other elements. And so, you know, this we of course, as soon as they share that with us, we authorize the addition of those guards. Mr. Palm has already contacted Andy Frain. They're in the process of identifying guards and training them with the hope that those guards could be in place as early as the end of the week. But it's important to allow, obviously, this comprehensive audit to unfold so that there can be that soup to nuts look and decisions can be made about how resources are allocated on the basis of expertise, because that's what we're paying for. So
that's a lot of guards.
It is.
One of those streets is a four-way stop.
Yeah.
It is.
Mm. And that's based on the qualitative observations of the police
department.
And not the,
yes.
Not the, the,
yes,
full-on.
And obviously the expertise of our police, our high-level police officers and police chief.
So is
meaningful.
It safe to maybe make the assumption that some of those infractions are being committed by people who have just completed drop-off at Lincoln or reside actually on Park near Lincoln?
Well, it's fair to say that the heaviest volume, and as far as vehicle load, is definitely drop-off and pickup time. So, but it will be interesting, without editorializing too much, to think about potentially consequences of having three guards at three blocks in a row on the use of Oak.
That's just a strange street, because usually if you look at all the schools two blocks around, they all have stop signs. So that Oak Street is just really strange that there's no stop signs that people have to go through.
Right.
So now the three crossing guards are going to have to be in rhythm
going
into the street and coming back, or else
they may cause more confusion than they save.
So they're going to have to be
in
complete rhythm. You could just put stop signs there.
And effectively,
or one
you have
stop
a closed, you know, Oak is closed on the south side of Roosevelt. You know, Oak had been, for lack of a better expression, kind of a straight shot for folks heading east to west. And now there are numerous reasons why that likely won't be used to the same degree. So what will be, you know, the accommodation for that? And will those areas now see increased vehicle
because
load?
If you, I don't mean to disrupt you, but if you go Lake Street in the morning, if Franklin is in the, if Park is in the street and the traffic's way back going west, and Franklin might be open, but then they're not in rhythm. I mean, that's a really long block, so it's really hard for them to be in rhythm. But those three blocks of Ashland, Franklin, and Park, if they're not in rhythm, there's going to be cars in the middle of the street.
I assume that the village would be communicating around this?
Great question. So Mr. Paul and I agreed that actually our communications coordinator would put together some language. And for our families and parents, it will actually be a component in the primer, which is supposed to go out, I believe, tomorrow. And then, of course, we'll be sharing that language with the village, and they'll be communicating it through their vehicles as well. So that's what we know about that today, but we felt like a little history was important, a lot of history.
So we don't know yet additional cost for those three, or do we?
Well, they run approximately 7,000.
6,000 each.
For a full year.
For a year.
For a full year.
Yeah, so these are temporary, so this is much
smaller.
So
we're not necessarily anticipating that we're going to keep all three of them. This is
what?
I would assume not after a study's done.
I would, yeah.
And then, of course, since it's above and beyond the $35,650 in the IGA, the cost will be split, even for the prorated guards, between the village and the school district. So more information to come.
Yep.
Okay.
Excellent. Cyber school.
Yes. So Dr. Harley had a word or two to share about that.
It's happening.
It's a word or two. Excellent.
Yeah, no, the
it's
dates
happening.
Are,
yes, too.
The dates are set. We're going to be, obviously, because Willard is our construction, we'll be using Lincoln and Roosevelt. We're in really good shape. I think we're a little bit ahead of the game versus last year. I think we're looking to tighten up our dates and our process a little bit. But in the interest of trying to boost our numbers, we're offering some flexible registration options. Next year for, we're hoping it'll entice some more middle school kids to come back and join us. So we're offering a series of 1 week classes so kids don't have to sign up for one thing for 4 weeks. There's some options that they can pick and choose and mix and match. And we're no longer holding Roosevelt readiness during the week of 4th of July because that was not a popular week among attendants or attendees of summer school. So
really?
What a surprise, yeah. So that's a big week for people, obviously, to enjoy their 4th of July family gatherings or excursions or whatever they do. So next month, I believe, Anthony and I are in the process of working with Katie to talk about what that pricing structure should look like based on the different courses. Took a close look at class sizes too to make sure that we are offering an appropriate number of classes. In the past, we've offered a lot, and a lot of them don't run, so we've eliminated classes that we know traditionally do not run. And we're mostly staffed, so we're in good shape.
That pricing structure will come to you as it does each March for you to approve.
Thank you for the leadership of that.
All right, and so that moves us on to an item brought to the board by our fellow board member, Judy, out of some concerns over the recent horrific events involving shootings in school again. So, Judy, do you want to lead this discussion?
Well, I've often wondered when these incidents occur, what can be done more so than getting on the phone to your elected representatives and pulling out your hair and being aggravated at the lack of leadership on this issue in the way of actually making meaningful change. And it occurred to me maybe instead of individually writing letters and making phone calls, we could collaborate with some neighboring school boards in Oak Park and write a letter coming from all three boards, District 200, District 97, District 90, to elected representatives, voicing our support for meaningful gun legislation and changing. Certainly, I don't know what that would look like. I don't know enough about what would really make a change. But looking at collaborating with other boards and seeing what we might ask of our legislators. So I just want to find out from our board whether or not that's something that our members would support.
I would certainly weigh in, you know, strongly in favor. I mean, a letter to the governor and to the General Assembly, just an open letter advocating for rational approach to gun control laws to help prevent these kinds of crises from happening in our schools. I would be comfortable with that as a statement from D90. And I do know, Judy, have you talked a little bit, right, with some folks on D97, D200 boards?
We emailed a little bit, and they're meeting with their boards. D97's board doesn't meet until, I think, next week. D200 is going to be talking about it at an upcoming meeting this week, I believe.
So I guess there's two ways to discuss, three things to discuss as a board. Number one, are we interested in taking a position as a board on this? Number two, if we are, would we be willing to go alone if the other two districts didn't want to join in? And number three, would we join in with the other two districts if they wanted to go along too? So I think that's the order of priority for discussion. First, we have to decide whether or not as a board we're comfortable.
Unfortunately, this event is, you know, making us, you know, think more clearly about how, you know, ISB, how the Illinois state government is providing resources, support to help keep our children safe. And I think we do that all the time. That's the number one function, I think, of our board and our position. I don't think that writing a letter to our legislature would mean that we are simply anti or pro gun control. We are pro students, pro school safety, and I think that issue is center, front and center in our position, political position, our elected position,
right,
to protect our kids. And I think we need to be vocal about asking for resources and asking for laws that protect our kids. So
I think it's difficult, though, to stand together if we don't know what we all stand for, if we don't know what position we're, you know, everybody is for gun safety, but what does that mean? Does that mean that we are looking to change gun legislation in the state of Illinois to ban assault weapons? This is a complex issue.
I mean, that'd be a nice start, banning assault weapons.
It seems very sensible to me, but evidently it's not an easy sell to everyone. And I just wonder if becoming involved in this would require the establishment of another committee to sit down and talk about specific issues and talk about exactly what it is that we're interested in doing here, or if what we're talking about doing is issuing a blank, you know, rather non-specific statement in favor of school safety, which I think in view of the other things that we do is not necessarily any kind of clarification. It doesn't have any teeth. And I'm not sure what exactly everybody wants to do. I feel like we have a number of committees evaluating and working with the other districts to try to articulate some of these other issues. And this one may be something that requires that kind of attention. I think there certainly is an awful lot of interest in, especially in view of this most recent event, in making some kind of a specific statement as to what we think ought to be done.
And I like your focus on specifics.
I think it's going to be meaningful on this issue, I think it needs to be specific. And I don't know that we can be specific involving the other districts unless we really sit down and talk about what kind of change we'd like to see. I mean, I was appalled when we didn't see bump stocks get outlawed after Las Vegas, but we didn't. It seems to me that there are things that really make an awful lot of sense that should be done, and if we're going to speak as a group and as a district, specific articulation of what it is that we're looking for seems to be the most meaningful way to go after that.
I think that's right, and we are elected officials, so let's not forget that. And so.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of contact with other
elected officials. And I think taking a stance as elected officials, you know, it'd be great if we could do this unanimously, be somewhat specific, and push the envelope here for child safety would make a lot of sense and be a more compelling thing. So I'd be willing to go alone if we couldn't get to that level of consensus with D97. I personally would be. This is a board decision. I'd be comfortable with D90 going alone if D97 and D200 couldn't get comfortable with some specific recommendations. I'll note that, you know, I've looked at national polling data on this issue again in the last few days, of course, in responses, and it's really interesting. Cross-party, cross-ideology, the majority of Americans support controlling assault weapons, you know, assault weapons stocks. And so it's not as if this is a liberal issue or a conservative issue. It's really one that I think consistently fails because of a well-paid lobbying against gun control of any form, right?
But it has unfortunately become an issue that focuses on kids.
Right.
Well, and consequently, we all pay the price for it.
Right. So.
So not just including, I think, couching it in that school safety banner and shield, you know, what are the other components of school safety that that we are asking for, you know, more resources, more information, more more coaching along with that. If we're going to be as specific as saying, please outlaw, you know, assault rifles, that's not going to be enough, in my opinion, if we're going to, you know, draft a letter. And I think that could be couched within the more general message of school safety, which is our charge. To what are the other things that we could include in terms of, you know, governmental support?
School violence, bullying, social emotional learning, all of these things kind of lead to, I mean, everyone that's been interviewed or everyone that knew these people that do these school shootings, they've had some type of problem with the school. So we get back to the nucleus of how the problem was started.
There's been a social emotional issue.
Right.
So
that's exactly that. And facilities, what kind of, you know, facilities, you know, could prevent, you know, is the Illinois state government supporting?
Think about all the time,
you know, safety precautions within
school.
Think
about all the time that is spent outside of the classroom doing drills. Training teachers on how to do drills.
It's opening a very complex can of worms. Now, that I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. I'm just saying that if we're going to start looking at school safety as a large issue.
Yeah.
I think it was a large part of the Roosevelt conversation.
Yeah, and I think we should clearly tie that in. I think maybe for it to be impactful, though, it can't be everything in the kitchen sink.
No,
it's got to be focused on guns and related safety
issues.
Ask
has to be very specific.
I think so.
To be more narrow, more specific, I think your frame is exactly right, Rich. It's got to be in that frame. I do believe the village passed a resolution advocating for better gun control laws in the state of Illinois. A little bit ago,
I don't think they asked for an assault rifle ban.
No, I thought it was more general. I don't remember the specifics of what was in it, but I like the idea of I would say a quick ad hoc committee to do some looking into this.
I think it requires a committee,
but you know, to report back maybe next board meeting. Judy, would you be willing to take that on?
Sure, yes,
I think you'd be perfect since you brought the issue to the board, and I think you were good at just a very compelling advocate to do this in your correspondence with me, and so I feel that you're the right one.
So touching base with the other two districts and seeing whether there is interest in creating a committee to formulate a specific statement is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe see what sort of gun control
conversation, what the ask would be.
Based on maybe initiatives that have generated widespread support that have been out there. And there's been a number of the Brady Bill, there's been a number of things. So if you could just take a quick meta-analysis of that stuff and pull out some of the things for us to consider. I think that'd be helpful for the discussion. But general feeling, I do want to take the temperature of the board. Are we interested in moving forward on this? I know I am.
I am. Yes. I think it could potentially take a great deal of energy to give it a very careful look. It could be that it's going to be one of those things that it's like pulling on the thread on a sweater where you pull the loose thread. The next thing you know, you're standing there with this great big handful of yarn. It could be that kind of a time-consuming issue, but I think it's certainly worth taking a look and seeing what, taking the temperature of the other boards and
Well, at least there's been a lot of good work done on this, not just in Illinois, but nationally. So, I mean, there are some best practice-y kind of things Judy can look at and sort of pull through and then bring to our consideration. But
well, and I would very much like to see it go forward. I think something very important needs to happen here, and nothing is happening.
Yeah. And Calvin, you voiced your support. I think Rich, you did too. All right, so that's unanimous. So let's go forward. Judy, you are now a committee of one.
Well, thank you.
I hope you have no discipline problems on the committee. I know if I had a committee of one, that would be my major problem.
Meeting schedules would be a big problem.
You mentioned, Ralph, as we move on, the village just now. And once again, this is an area in which the village has been a great partner with the school district. So as a matter of fact, just Friday, Chief O'Shea reached out to the school district with a letter, specifically opening the door, you know, a letter of support and opening the door if there's additional resources or supports that they could provide. So we're very fortunate we're not working in isolation, and the strength of our community, I'm sure, is going to be a real asset as we move forward.
Can I just add to that add your email out to the public and the school community was spot on, and a lot of excellent feedback about caring, and thoughtful and proactive district ideas with your leadership. So thank you.
When I heard about the background of the kid, the shooter, I did think that I was very pleased with the efforts that Roosevelt is making with the advisory to create relationships for kids, meaningful relationships with adults, because I think that kind of thing may be one of the more important things that we can do, especially with kids who may have some of those kinds of issues. They need that kind of contact more than they need anything else, and probably that would change more than all the gun laws in the world if that was done as well as I think it needs to be done. So I was glad to think that we were working on that.
School board meeting calendar.
Yes, so you have a draft in your packet. It looks very similar as it has in past years. You'll note that in January and February, of course, those federal holidays always seem to cause us to need to move our meetings to Tuesday nights. But other than that, the recommended nights fell very cleanly.
Monday, May 6th, organizational meeting because of the election.
Right.
That's a note of a change.
Okay.
Or a non-standard day.
All at 7 o'clock?
I don't care.
I know you don't.
So feel free to take a look at that. And, of course, if you have questions about that before the next month, we'll bring it back for your final consideration in March. Next item is our Illinois Science Assessment results. We received the 2016 and 2017 results within a fairly short window of time. I know Dr. Hawley has given them a close look, and as well as our middle school principal and assistant principal. And did you have any comments or anything to share?
The individual student score reports for current DNA students will go out Friday the 23rd. Because of budgetary uncertainty and the timing of the results, they're not intended to be utilized for individualized adjustment of instruction for students. It's really more of a higher level look at the assessment itself in terms of rolling out and the degree to which the administration was smooth. And so It's intended to allow kids to show what they know, and it's meant to be more of an application in terms of the assessments that they're taking, in the same vein that, that Park is as well. To the extent that it is reading comprehension test, I'm interested in looking at it a little more closely. But overall, our kids had a very, very strong performance. 2016 was a little higher than 2017, about a 3% difference, but that was the same case. The state was down 3% year over year, so it was our district. But again, our results are very strong. So.
The big reason that it's difficult to look at these for formative purposes, you know, so the 2016 assessment was administered to children at that time in fifth and eighth grade, and now those children are in seventh grade and sophomore year. So, you know, receiving the scores at this time makes it hard to use it, you know, for anything more than programmatic decisions.
I would say their partnership with University of Southern Illinois is a good one. It's well intended in terms of making sure that the test is well designed and it's appropriately scored, and, you know, they're setting good benchmarks. Mm-hmm. Because we don't receive item analyses, it's difficult to see which area students may be having trouble or in need of improvement. So my guess is the more firmly entrenched this assessment gets, I think it's going to get more sophisticated with its reporting. But I think just that its implementation occurred at a tough budgetary time, and so they did what they could. And
so were these two exams at all comparable to each other?
The format was the same, so it was under an hour. It is still multiple choice, but it was under an hour. There were not that many items on either, so I don't want to be wrong in the number, but it was not a very good.
Because our eighth grade drop-off was worse than the state's drop-off, and our eighth grade drop-off by group, in particular African Americans, were little.
Yeah, right. That was interesting to me. So they really haven't published any the ISB. I combed through all their stuff to see if there were differences in design or content or anything like that, and there was not, so.
And I don't know if everyone tracked that, right, but from 16 to 17, the statewide performance dropped, as Allison said, by just under 3 points, from 61.1% proficient to 58.9. We dropped by 9 points. From 86.4%
that same cohort, I think that's that same cohort, though, that struggled on the Park that we saw.
Yeah, I think it is.
So that cohort in particular has had a more of a dip in their scores than historically compared to other cohorts. So
you would think the first year was, it came out of Washington, right, this particular test?
D.C.
Yeah. So, it just kind of took it, I think, because, well, at the high school level, because ACT was dropped and there was no science assessment on the SAT.
Right.
But with the state of Park now, this is probably the most stable thing that we've got, you know.
Thank you for looking at it. Thanks to you and Amy O'Toole for the initial analysis. So. All right, and that brings us to our last.
Which you chatted a little bit about already,
yes.
The software.
Yeah, can I give you a little history? The Township School Treasurer's Office is multiple districts we are a part of. They have the contractual arrangement with the financial accounting software vendor. We do not. As do most township school treasurers, the individual districts do not have a relationship with the vendor. So merely we were asked to be part of a steering committee to help select from the finalists they brought forth. And you read that in their memo, I hope, starting on page 170 or so. The reason for this change is basically because as of June 30 of 2017, the owner and developer of their current financial accounting software retired. Sold the company to, and there was probably a staff of about 25 or 30 in that company. Sold it to her lead programmer, who went out on his own. For those of you who may have been around back in the late 90s and early 2000s, and I was associated with this township or this district through my experience with our auditing firm, they had a sole proprietor software vendor who passed away, and they were left scramble without service, and they were, you know, able to go a few months, but then changed in May of 2000, so mid-year almost. They want to avoid that, knowing that this is now generally being run by a sole proprietor. He has a couple of employees, but not anywhere near the size that the company was. So we feel that this is that's why the districts came together and agreed on this new company that serves many school districts across many states. You'll lose a little bit in that personal service, even though they do have some satellite offices in Illinois, but it's web-based. It's just, you know, it's 21st century, unlike the one is kind of antiquated. While it's served us very well, going forward, we feel, as do all the other districts, that it'd be best to change. But we agreed with the recommendation to not go live until July 1 of 19 because of various circumstances going on at the treasurer's office, which they have a lot of turnover, and also of a truncated training schedule. This is probably something that should take almost a year, and we would have to do this in 4 months. We would be out of the office many days. So you see the cost there. Since these are not above any real threshold for you to even take it to you as an action item, we wanted you to be aware of it as an informational item.
Can I ask just the kind of history of the proviso, the township treasurer, proviso township?
That's correct.
So many other districts got out of that particular township back in the, ended townships in the other.
There are other townships that have been abolished. The closest one around here is Cicero Township School Treasurer's Office, which held 97,200 and the Morton and Berwyn.
So can you just talk about the savings again by going to them versus having our own?
As I listed on here, we pay them about $54,000 a year to be our legal custodian of all of our cash and investments, be our treasurer. They do investing for the entire township in a pool. They also process various things. I mean, we do the back-end accounting of it. We do accounts payable. We do payroll. But they have the check stock, so there's a segregation of duties involved there. So there's some internal controls that are added by having them off-site. They do the reconciliations. There's a lot of accounting and internal control things that you can't quantify from a dollar standpoint. But if we were to not be in them, you would have to name someone, preferably me, as the treasurer. And we would probably have to add one person to our staff, and salary and benefits would probably be more than $54,000. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. People ask that question.
They see it on the ballot, yeah. And they're like, what the?
Right. And the one thing is that while the history of the township's investments have had one instance in the past few years that they weren't so successful in, but in general, investing $400 million or $300 million.
Infinity got hornswoggled.
Okay. Yeah. But still.
Is that the technical term?
Yeah.
I'm not a finance
An
guy,
industry
but, so
term.
I don't understand.
Right, but investing in a pool of $380 million is better than investing a pool of $26 million. So there's another, really something that you can't quantify unless you estimated what the return would have been.
How many years has it been since there's been a financial operating system change?
2000.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I didn't hear. Asked the way you said it.
Yes.
It's time for this.
Yes, and I will say that the company that we have, or the township has, Data Control and Research is the name of the software, is probably going to lose a lot of school district clients because of this, knowing they're going to go this direction. They were a major player up until this retirement.
So we are going to have a couple of upcoming meetings, a committee of the whole meeting on March 6th, 2018, right here, and a business meeting on March 19th, 2018, also right here. And
you want to note the times of those meetings?
7 o'clock. Everyone knows that.
7 o'clock.
Our communications people are going to make darn sure.
Number five.
So, we are about to go into a closed session according to 5 Illinois Comprehensive Statutes 120/2(c) for the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the public body or legal counsel for the public body. including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee of the public body or against legal counsel for the public body determines validity. So at this point, everyone needs to leave. We will be coming back and take some action on the personnel report after we come back.
Motion to go into closed session.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.